From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the ninth day of December 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Total Farm Marketing. She's out of Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will join us from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to help us take an extensive look at the weather forecast in the growing regions across the planet, in particular South America, Argentina, and Brazil. And we'll do all of that on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago today, March corn at $4.23¾ settled 4 cents higher, the May up 3½ at $4.26½, and December of next year two higher at $4.10½. January soybeans $11.58½, 12¾ higher. March at $11.63½ up 12, and November beans 6¾ higher at $10.48. The bean meal at $3.79.10 up 2¢ for the day, and the bean oil at 42 cents higher settled $37.86 on the afternoon. Wheat futures nearby contract March at $5.83¼, up 13¼ for the soft red. The hard red at March at $5.51, that finished 14 cents higher on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago nearby contract at 47½ cents lower, $107.37½, the settlement price for the December. The February live cattle at $110.97½, up 20 cents, and feeder cattle finished the January contract down 55 at $137.02½. Lean hog, $66.27½ per 100 pounds, finished 67½ cents higher for the day. Crude oil futures in Chicago at $45.46 a barrel, down 14 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.39¾ per gallon. That's about 0.8 cents lower on the afternoon. Gasoline on the RBOB up a penny and 6 cents at $1.27¼. Natural gas at $2.45½. That's up 5¾ cents. Ethanol futures at $1.32, unchanged for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Jackie Vakes now joins us from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, thank you for being with us, Jackie. We appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome, Todd. I'm glad to be able to be here. I can tell you that much.
Oh, I bet. Speaking of which, why don't you give us a little update on how you and coronavirus have been managing since last week?
Well, I actually, the last 3 days, I haven't run a fever. Okay, so yesterday I was out of the house for the first time in a month. Under exertion, I still do get short of breath some, but not anywhere near what I was before. I don't know if I told you last week or not, but as an example, the first weekend I took a shower and it took me 3 hours to get my air back. Now, when I showered, it might take about 2 or 3 minutes. It doesn't take very long. So definitely an improvement. But, last night was the first night that I slept through the night. Since I had this, you're either running a fever or, it really works hard on your body. Let's put it that way. And one of the things that it seems to leave behind is lots of inflammation. And I have a lot of friends who've had it. People who had joint problems say that their joints are just much worse than they had been before. And I truly believe that that is inflammation is what it is. And so there's just it's a nasty, nasty thing is what it is. And I had a mild case. I did not have a severe case. So the last 4 weeks are kind of like, just X them off out of your life and go on from there. And that's all you can do.
And perseverance. And we're so happy that you're still able to do the job. Speaking of which, why don't you go ahead and get started with the managed money and the export inspections, along with the support and resistance levels.
Alrighty. On support resistance, March corn support 416, resistance 432. We did test the downtrend line and we failed. May 411 support 435, resistance crossovers at 420. December 21, 401 support 419. That was a big change from last week. Crossovers at 462. Now that's on a weekly chart. Beans, I'll give us January, but I've also added May because January is coming to the end now. Support in January, $11.02. Resistance, $12. Crossover, $9.77. March, $11.07, $12.05. And the crossover is at $9.97. May, $10.41, $11.92. And a crossover at $10.41. Excuse me. And on November 21st, on November 21, excuse me, and this too is a weekly chart, 1036 support, 1066 resistance, and it is trading above the uptrend line. So that's an improvement. You're starting to see some things here, and I do believe that it's going to be interesting to see after our report tomorrow whether or not we can continue to do that, because, you know, the talk is going to start to come out about, well, the ratio is high. You know, the ratio is 2.55 from beans to corn. Means we're going to plant more beans, you know, so we'll see once what happens there. Dow Jones Index, 29,569 support, 30,139 resistance. U.S. dollar, 87.81 support, 92.07 resistance. We're seeing a little rebound in the dollar. Managed money, soft red wheat, short 8,000 compared to 9,000 last week. Corn long, 266 compared to 246 last week. Beans long, 187 compared to 180 last week. Meal, 61 long compared to 64 last week, and soy oil, 110 long compared to 100 last week. So we can see that the managed money has come back in at a small level and increased its long positions and decreased the wheat position just a little bit. Export inspections. Wheat exports are running 3% ahead of a year ago. It was 1% last week. Corn, 69% ahead of a year ago. And that is compared to 68% last week, and the USDA up 49% for the season. Soybeans, 69% on the year, and last week it was up 78%. So we've seen a bit of a decrease in export inspections on beans. The USDA has them at a 31% increase on the year.
We'll get to those USDA numbers that are due out tomorrow shortly. However, I'm wondering what you're watching closely with China this week.
Well, it was kind of interesting. There was an interesting wire story that came out. It was titled "Soy: Hungry China Gets Early Start Buying Next Year's U.S. Crop," and I think this is important for us to remember. They actually are buying U.S. supplies for next year earlier than they usually do, and you know that I don't think anybody's too surprised by that. They didn't buy that many cargoes. But at the same time, you know, they're loading up on crops anywhere from corn to soybeans because that hog population is really recovering from that African swine fever. And it's recovering actually much faster than traders and analysts expected at all. So their economy is also coming back from the coronavirus pandemic. So that's helping boost their demand for food. So, you know, I guess the key word here is, you know, that their front loading is basically what they're doing. So we always have to be concerned about China. As long as they have a big need, and I know that they do right now, it should support us. But always be cautious when it comes to making your sales decisions based on the idea that China is just going to continue to do what they're currently doing.
USDA tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and folks can visit our website, willag.org, 11 Central Time, and see these numbers as they're released. We'll update the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. What are your expectations? It looks like the trade believes that both the corn and soybeans, even the wheat, ending stocks for the 2020-21 year will be lower than they were last month.
Absolutely. When you look at corn, they're expecting the average guess is 1.697 billion compared to 1702. Not a whole lot of change, 5 billion, excuse me, 5 million bushels, but still a lower number. Beans, 165 compared to 190. Wheat, 874 compared to 877. So that has an impact on the world. Now, the 1920 ending stocks for the world are also decreasing from 303.3 in November to 302 on corn, 95.3 to 94.7 on beans, and 300.8 to 300.2 on wheat. So now that rolls into 2021. And therefore, last month we had 291.4 on corn. They're expecting 289.3. those expectations are based primarily on a reduction in the U.S. numbers as well as Argentina. And when we look at wheat for 2021, taking it down just slightly from 320.5 down to 321.5. And I mentioned Argentina. So Argentina last month, they were at 50 on corn. They're taking them to 49.25 is the estimate. 51 on beans down to 50.4. They're expecting that on the Brazilian side of things, they're going to have a slight decrease in corn from 110 to 109. And on beans from 133 to 132.3. And so we'll see once. You know, the big thing I think to take away from this is that this is already in the market. You know, so in order for us to have anything wild happen in the marketplace, it usually takes a pretty decent deviation off of what the estimates are because they're already trading them.
You mentioned the competitors to the United States, Brazil and Argentina. What are you watching closely in that part of the world? Of course, we've been in the midst of a weather market based on what's happening there.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. And it's also based on what is happening with the U.S. dollar. And, you know, so many times I talk about that with you, the currency exchange rate. Well, I have some good examples today of what's happened down in Brazil. We've seen their bean prices decline as much as 20% in some locations in the last 30 days. And most of it is because of the relationship between the currencies, the Brazilian currency and the U.S. dollar. You know, they get paid in U.S. dollars. The dollar's been down. Their currency has not gone down. It's just stayed basically about the same. So to give you an example, in Mato Grosso, 30 days ago, beans were $15 a bushel. They're down to $12. Tangera, $13.72 down to $13.55. San Gabriel, $14.57 to $12.86. Goyos, $13.37 to $12.43, and in Paraná, $13.72 to $12.60. And those numbers come from Dr. Cordonier. I really appreciate that. You know, and the stronger currency, basically, it's good news. The Brazilian GDP grew by 7.7% during the third quarter. Not surprising. A lot of that is based on what they've been getting for agricultural products. But I think it's a good example for our listeners to understand what an impact the currency exchange it really has. You know, we don't see it, but boy, I'll tell you, the other people certainly see it. There really hasn't been a lot of interest on the part of buyers, you know, to bid up any of the rest of the available soybean supplies. So this is going to be interesting to see just what happens down there. Now, This is amazing. Remember how we've talked about the Paraná River being so low this year, you know, and everything else? Well, they have 600 trucks backed up at the Paraguay border trying to bring in soy and corn. And it's really a strange situation, I guess, because the tight domestic supplies, the importers, you know, they need to get beans. They need to get corn. And they're trying desperately to bring them in from Paraguay, especially beans. But there's a logistical problem. They can't use any barges because everything is so low. So now you got to move everything by truck, right? And as of last week, over 600 trucks loaded with soybeans and corn were waiting to cross into Mato Grosso do Sul from Paraguay. And this is really a tiny little and very little used crossing point. So there's only one customs office with one customs official. In normal times, it takes a day for a truck carrying beans or corn to be inspected and cleared for entry into Brazil. A day, can you imagine? So this is just not normal at all in terms of time. So there's some trucks that have been sitting at the border for 15 days already, waiting to try and get in. So, you know, it's just plain crazy. They have to go through customs. There's just no two ways about it. And the other thing that happened for the first time is the U.S. soybeans were unloaded at the Port of Paranaguá in southern Brazil, which is where Jeff and I went that time. Now, this is also interesting. So everything's not sweet and rosy all the time down there. The vessel Discoverer came into port with 30,500 tons of beans on it. And it started to unload last week, Thursday. They can only unload 6,000 tons a day. So it takes 5 days to unload one ship if there's no rain. So it is really a challenging situation. You know, they oversold is basically what they did, you know, and they sold themselves short. So it's not an easy easy circumstance. Argentina, not a whole lot going on other than the rainfall has really improved over the last week. Corn is 35% planted compared to 44.4% five-year average. But if you take that and you look at the major corn production areas, they're 85 to 90% planted already.
Hey, thank you for the update. I appreciate that. I hope you have a good week, and we'll talk with you next Wednesday.
Well, I'll talk with you tomorrow, I hope. Commodity week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You'll be on Commodity Week tomorrow. Fantastic. I was not thinking about that properly. Oh, well, we'll talk to you tomorrow then, Jackie, okay?
Okay, thanks. Take care.
You too. That's Jackie Vakes. She's with Total Farm Marketing from Hollister, Missouri, and will join us on our Commodity Week program tomorrow. We'll record that at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Should have it posted to the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock Thursday evening. Let's check in now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir, and good afternoon to you as well.
Let's move quickly to South America today. How are conditions in Brazil?
Well, for the most part, much better than they were last week when we talked for quite a few areas. We've had some good rain in the interior south of the country. We've had enough scattered showers in other areas to help fill the little holes of dryness that had been around. We still have a few pockets, though, that need more moisture. A little bit in southern Mato Grosso, the state of Goiás, needs a little bit more rain. Maybe a little bit more also in the far south and extreme northeast. But relative to where we were 1 week ago, we've probably fixed half of the moisture deficit problems. And of course, now the big assessment is how much of the crop have we permanently harmed by the past 60 days of less than ideal weather. And I think the answer to that really comes down to, you know, how much of that crop was planted late enough that it's still pre-reproductive and has a full potential to become better established. And I really think that's where we are. I think most of this crop has limped along and done okay, but not well. And we are now bringing moisture in on a more routine basis. And if this can continue through the balance of this week, we will start setting pods and filling them in a much more favorable environment. And if you think back on our troublesome summers here in the States, you know, we've had a lot of springs where the rain's been a little lackluster. And then we turn on the rain, you know, in July and August, and that soybean crop just takes off. And I think that is the potential scenario that we're at right now. Yes, we lost some yield. I don't want to make it sound like we're still looking at huge crop. We're still looking at a very big one, but it's probably not as big as what was anticipated early on. But I don't think we've lost all that terribly much, and it'll be interesting to see how we end up. But it has to be perfect from this point forward.
All along, the Argentines have suffered more than the Brazilians, farmers that is, from dry conditions. Has that been alleviated at all across that nation?
You know, a big part of central and northeastern Argentina has had some regular occurring rainfall over the past month. It has not been normal, but it has been routine enough that the crop has held together fairly well. That early planted corn and early sunseed has probably had some notable losses. Those crops were planted early enough and didn't get enough timely rain to really do well. And that's pretty typical of La Nina years. That pattern is repeated over and over and over again. The early crops just don't have the moisture. It starts raining sometime in November, and so it's really hard to get the yield back on the early planted crops. But, you know, the bulk of soybeans don't even start getting planted until early November in Argentina. So having somewhat of a timely rainfall pattern over the past 2 or 3 weeks there is supportive of the germination and emergence and additional planting. So I think that for right now, a big part of that soybean crop is not doing too bad. Now, there is still a lot of dryness, though, in southern parts of Argentina, especially in the southwest right now. That would be places like southern Cordoba, which is a very rich crop area. portions of San Luis, as well as La Pampa and western portions of Buenos Aires. Now, these areas are not going to do well with rain over the next 10 days, or even 2 weeks for that matter. There are opportunities for rain. I think we've got one little system tomorrow into Friday, but that'll favor Buenos Aires over the rest of that region. And then we'll wait until sometime in the week of Christmas for the next round of precipitation to occur. That'd be sometime in the 21st through the 23rd period. It'll probably be the next opportunity for rain in southern Argentina. So there is going to be ongoing stress for especially the southwest part of that country. And we are probably still going to lose some additional yield. But certainly over the past 2 weeks, we've done a bit better, and that the declining trend has at least temporarily subsided.
Can you check in on the northern hemisphere, on the wheat-growing regions of the world? I know they're going into the winter months, but they've been awfully dry.
Yes. I had a phone call sometime earlier this week, someone trying to say that the dryness in the U.S. plains was as bad or worse than 2011. And the implication from that statement was that, well, that led right into the 2012 drought. Well, there's a couple of errors with that statement. First of all, the dryness in the southern plains in general has not been as severe as 2011. Now, you can certainly find a couple of locations that are as bad off. But generally speaking, when you look at the drought indices, we are not nearly as dry over a broad area as we were in 2011. And then secondly, the 2012 drought actually began in the eastern United States and worked its way westward. And so the relationship with what's happening in the plains is not necessarily correlation material. So we have to be real careful with making those kinds of statements. In the meantime, the wheat crop is not as well established as it should. Everybody knows that. And the crop is moving into dormancy, or if not already there. And the prospects for precipitation over this next couple of weeks is not very good. There will be some sporadic light precipitation, but it's not likely to get down to the roots very well. And we'll have to wait until late in the winter to early spring to really bring on precipitation that might have a little bit more potential impact. And La Nina is expected to weaken by that point in time. So there is some potential that we might be able to improve the moisture profile, but it is still a few weeks away. Now, in Russia, there has been no precipitation of significance since we talked last week, and none is expected for another 10 days at least. I do still believe that they will also see some precipitation increase as we move forward through the second half of winter, but the ground ought to be good and hard and frozen by then, so it's probably not going to make it into the root zone, and we'll have to wait until spring for them as well.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have yourself a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.